The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod, very excited to be here with you on this Wednesday. We keep feeling like it is the end of April because we've been doing so much, but it's the 10th. It is the 10th. We're wishing a very happy birthday to Dr. Doreen Grampiche this morning. If you guys were here with us yesterday, we kind of pre-celebrated with her yesterday, but wishing her a very happy birthday. We've got a great show for you today. We've got an amazing, charismatic, doesn't even begin to describe this autism expert, but Amanda Ralston's going to be joining with us in just a few minutes, and if you've not had the pleasure of hearing her speak, I'm so excited for you today, because I know she's going to say something profound, and it's going to be fun, and it's certainly not going to be boring. I don't think boring is in her lexicon. Good morning, Susie B. So glad to have you here. So she's going to be joining us in just a few minutes talking about her company, Non-Binary Solutions, and the software that they have that she says is going to revolutionize autism treatment. We have had her on the show before, and we had her. She did one of the hours in our podcast-a-thon, which was absolutely amazing, talking about sleep. But I was saying to her this morning, I still don't think I understand what the software solution is, because when we've had her on before, it was too early to talk about it. But I hear today she's going to tell us about it. So I'm very excited about that. Hello, Rodney. Good morning. How are you? Although, Rodney, I think, is it afternoon where you are? I'm not 100% sure. It doesn't matter. Good morning, good afternoon, whatever you're doing. So we are live right now, as you guys can tell, because I'm doing my shout-out to people who are writing in already this morning. We're live on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter, and about a dozen other sites right now. Our fabulous Chris Desmond is starting to show you. If you're watching video and sound, you can see all the different places that the show will air and play or that you can download it. We thank Chris because he is absolutely amazing. We always want to remind you that we're live right now. You can be interacting. You can write in questions, comments, give shout-outs. Just afternoon. I see. I thought that was in my head that you were in the afternoon there. So that's awesome. And thank you. That's right, because we had talked about Kansas City the other day. So anyway, it's funny because we just interviewed Temple Grandin on Monday. You'll see that interview a week from tomorrow. And she was talking about how she has a verbal brain. And the minute you say Kansas, I'm seeing Wizard of Oz. I'm seeing tornadoes. I'm hoping you're well. I used to have family that lived in Kansas, so thoughts are with you. Anyway, we're live right now. You can be writing in. We love to interact with you. I would tell you that it's our favorite thing. When you guys write into us and we get to interact with you, it is absolutely our favorite thing. So please take the opportunity to do that. Now, we know that for most of you, you're catching this later on in the day or you're listening to it in podcast at whatever opportunity is appropriate for you. We hope that you enjoy the show in whichever format you watch. If you're watching us on Facebook Live or on our YouTube channel, you're getting that audio and visual. If you're doing the podcast, you're getting the audio only. Especially on the podcast, you will notice that there are sponsor breaks, and we hope that you embrace that. That's what makes the download of the podcast free for you. That's literally how we do that magic trick, because it does cost us money to do this, but it makes it free for you when you're listening to the podcast on whatever platform you're downloading it. Now, some of you have written in and said you'd prefer to get it without the ads. And if that is something that's important to you, and you've said that you're willing to pay a little bit of money for that, if that's something of interest to you, you can get that. We partnered with Glow, so you can go to Glow, glow.fm/autismlive. And when you go there, it's $5 a month. It's actually cheaper when you do it across a year. And not only do you get all of Autism Live and all the different shows that we're incubating on Autism Live, but you also get Ask Dr. Doreen, and you get all of them in your, how you set it up, your inbox, however you set it up, you get all of them ad-free, which is a really lovely thing. I have really started, at this late date, have started to get into more and more podcasts, and I enjoy the ease of use when they're all in one place. And I can just get in the car and say the name of that person that I'm not going to say because I don't want to set off all your electronics. But I say play podcast and it plays the next one that was downloaded. Ooh, and then I'm just off to the races in the car. So I so love that convenience. Anyway, that's available to you, glow.fm at Autism Live. But we are available wherever you get your podcasts. If Spotify is your jam, you're listening in Apple Podcasts, whatever your thing, we hope that you will download and listen. Our whole mission here at Autism Network is to provide information and inspiration. That's what we're about. And we want to provide that to that larger autism community that, of course, starts with individuals who are themselves on the spectrum. They are the beating heart of our community. They're the why behind the rest of us, which is the rest of that community, which are people who love individuals who are on the spectrum. That's really what we're about. We feel like that should be the entire world, people on the spectrum and people who love people on the spectrum. We're not there yet, but we're working on it. We're working on it 1 hour at a time. And we know that it's not a one-size-fits-all community. So especially this month in April, we're trying to give you a wide variety of things so that you can take what you need, leave the rest, right? I do want to say that before we get to the jargon, that tomorrow we are having two gentlemen on. Their organization is called Hurdle. They are self-advocates from Florida at very different points in their life, and they are trying to support teens and adults on the spectrum in Florida. So I hope you'll tune in to hear about what Hurdle stands for and how they're making it possible for people to get over hurdles. So that'll be wonderful. Then on Friday, we have Katie Gibney, a wonderful autism expert, BCBA, who specializes in treating teens and adults. I hope you'll enjoy that. On Monday, Lillian Carrier is going to be here with us. She's a wonderful actress. She and her twin sister together started their own autism charity, 501c3, it's a nonprofit, that's called Ourtism, and they are also helping teens and adults. You know Lillian, she's an actress, and you know her from Everything's Gonna Be Okay on Freeform. Oh my gosh, what a wonderful, she and her actual assistant dog were on the show. I saw her at the Autism in Entertainment Conference, and I said to her, are you going to bring the dog with you? And she had a funny look on her face, and I realized last night, we're doing it virtually. So, and she was like, no, I don't think I'm bringing Luke to that. Now it makes all sense. I was picturing Luke in the studio, but nobody's going to be in the studio but me. So it'll be virtual, but it'll be live. Then then on Tuesday, of course, Dr. Graham Pichet will be back. And I believe that the topic for next Tuesday is food selectivity. So that'll be really wonderful. On Wednesday, we have a very wonderful but sometimes controversial guest, Thomas McKeon, will be here. He is one of the people credited with coming up with the puzzle piece, and he loves an opportunity to talk to you about identity and what that initial group of people meant by the puzzle piece, because it's been interpreted in many different ways. And so Thomas is a very interesting, and I find it very interesting to listen to him. He'll be here on Wednesday, but there will be some controversy. We welcome it. Then on Thursday, that's when we're playing the Dr. Temple Grandin interview that I was just talking about a few minutes ago. It's wonderful. She's talking about her new book, and boy, it's all about employment and getting individuals on the spectrum in the right job and supporting them so that not only can they get the job, but they can keep the job. Ooh, it's a great conversation. And then on Friday, autism expert Jen Barreto will be here, and she specializes in talking about severe challenging behavior, how we deal with that, how we help, how we do that compassionately, and that's a wonderful topic. Hard show, But thrilled that we'll have the opportunity to talk about that with her. I'm saying good morning to Helen. Helen, I'm so glad you're here. So we like to start the show with something we fondly refer to as the jargon of the day. This is when we take on one word, one phrase, one acronym. We first give you the actual definition. Sometimes I make fun of the jargon terms in the actual definition because I have to have a hobby, and that's my hobby. And then we give you what we hope is a working definition that helps you understand what this term means and why it's vital to understand it and use it in your daily life. That's where we hope to get to. If we don't get there and you don't understand it, that's on me. Don't think that it's you, and we'll try again another time. But today's term, pretty important term. When I got this term, it was like fireworks going off in my head. I was like, oh, I suddenly get all these things that I didn't get before. So let's dig in, shall we? Joint attention is the term that we're talking about today. So our actual definition, and this is from the APA Dictionary of Psychology, attention overtly focused by two or more people on the same object, person, or action at the same time, with each being aware of the other's interest. I gotta say, I don't hate this definition. I think overtly is not a $10 word, it's maybe a $5 word that leaves a little room for confusion, but it's not bad. I especially love that we're talking about two or more people focused on the same object, person, or action at the same time, but there is this element of being aware of the other's interest. I like it. I'm not going to throw it in the trash bin. But let's see if we can't take it a little bit further. That I call this the triangle of attention that is a basic social building block. Joint attention is a critical developmental skill. Now, why do I say that? Okay, the place where people had explained this to me, and I didn't get it until I was at Disneyland. And I was at Disneyland, and I got to be honest, I don't ride the rides at Disneyland because I get car sick sitting here. I am literally a little dizzy and car sick sitting here. So the tram is about as much as I can handle at Disneyland. But, you know, my husband and my son, they go on all these rides, and for me, it's a vacation. I get to see how happy, especially when my son was little, you know, he would run off the ride, and he would be so excited to come and find me and communicate with me what it was like at whatever point he was at in communication. And I would get to sit there and people watch or read my book. This is okay. This is okay for me. It was a good break. And it was time that I got to be with my husband where we weren't worried about everything else under the sun. I encourage you all to find something like that that you can do on a regular basis. But sometimes I would sit there and I would ponder everything. And I would see kids, and sometimes it would make me sad that I would look at a kiddo and something that they could do, and I would go, oh, my kid can't do that. And it would make me sad. And I started looking, going, what is it exactly? And it was early on in autism, and I was trying to figure out, what is autism? What is, you know, for lack of a better word, what is that puzzle piece that I don't understand? I want to understand. The puzzle piece isn't something, I don't think it's something missing in our kids. I think it's something missing in our understanding. And I wanted to understand. And I remembered looking at this very little girl who was dressed so cute in like a Minnie Mouse kind of esque skirt. And she was walking with her mom. She was 2 years old, and the mom was not having to hold her hand. And first of all, that was freaking me out because my child was a runner. If you didn't have a hold on him, and he would run right towards cars, he would duck under things. Like, there was no walking through Disneyland with him without holding his hand. You know what I'm saying? And so here was this little girl, too, and mom wasn't even worried. She wasn't holding her hand. And as I was watching them, marveling at that and mourning it, right, I was experiencing some personal grief that I did not know how to do this. Minnie Mouse walks by. And I saw the little girl look at Minnie Mouse and then look at her mom. And her mom looked at the little girl, looked at Minnie Mouse, looked back at the little girl, and then it was a triangle of attention. And they were both looking at Minnie Mouse and then looking at each other. And I saw in that moment the amount of communication that was happening between them. That if I had scripted it, it was all nonverbal, but if I had scripted it, was not vocal, let me be clear about that. If I had scripted it, the little girl would have said, oh, Minnie Mouse, Mom, do you see Minnie Mouse? I'm so excited. Are you excited too? And Mom would have been saying, oh my gosh, it's Minnie Mouse, your favorite. Are you excited? I'm excited. And that information was transferring. And then they would look at Minnie Mouse and they would have this moment together that was a moment that could be built upon. That now this mom and her daughter know we both saw Minnie Mouse and we both love Minnie Mouse. And it's exciting to both of us. She was noticing her mom's facial expressions. She was noticing how Mom felt about Minnie Mouse. And I went, I don't have that. I don't have that. My son looks and sees Darth Vader, and he just runs to Darth Vader. He does not say to me, Mom, did you see Darth Vader? He is in his own space, and he's not even looking to see if I'm afraid of Darth Vader. So he's not looking to see if I'm feeling danger in life. There's a whole lot of information that he and I are not trading. So that triangle of attention, so, so vital. And you know what I learned? That we could work on that. That we could take that and we could create it and create a circumstance in which we could contrive it. And then we could make it so that it was fun for him to notice that I agreed with him. Or for him to know, oh, that look on Mom's face means something scary is happening and I should be careful right now. And we built and we built and we built. But think about how many social skills that ends up being later on in life. That means noticing, oh, that person doesn't like that. I love that, but you don't like that? That's interesting. My mind is different from your mind. Or what I am doing is making that person unhappy. If I care about them, maybe I need to evaluate that, right? If we just leave that out, it creates a world in which I don't think the individual, I'm just going to say what a lot of my friends who are adults on the spectrum will say to me sometimes. They're like, it's like there's all these rules that I missed that are written somewhere that I don't see. And for me, as a parent and as a teacher, I always go back to that triangle of attention, where if we can get that happening as early as possible, think about how much information and think about the connection. I always go back to that mom and the little girl with the Minnie Mouse because they bonded over Minnie Mouse. Can that be like overstated how important that is as a parent, that you feel that connection? That like we both like that or we both don't like that. Or we're having this moment where we're laughing about this thing that's happening over there. It's the beginning of all the good stuff. So if you're like me and you are whatever age you or your child is or your loved one, your significant other, if you're missing that and you're feeling the grief of it, I just want to encourage you. We can build upon and both parties, you can learn how to support that and reinforce it, right? And the other person can learn, oh, it actually feels good when I check in. I know more about what's happening when I see what you like. It's a good thing. Good morning, Autism Journey with Elijah. I'm so thrilled you're here because I think you're going to love our guest. Okay, are you ready for this? Because I can't read this entire bio, but I love it. This is exemplary of who this professional is. Amanda Ralston, and most people who know her call her Mandy. She is a BCBA and a wonderful, wonderful person. I'm going to say wonderful things, but I want to read this. She's a serial entrepreneur. Okay. She is a perpacious creative synthesizer. I need a dictionary. We need to start jargon all over again, and I need to look up these words. An intellectual decorator crab. What does that even mean? And she's an avid observationalist. Now, this I know to be true. Because I have said all week, and I'm going to say it again today, if you are not following her on Facebook, you are missing out on some of the joys of life, because she posts things every day that make me just plots. I said this morning, I have to make sure I'm not drinking something or I'll do a spit take. She is charismatic, dynamic, and a compassionate thought leader and a fan of the Oxford comma. I love that. She has been a certified behavior analyst since 2002. She started out as a BCABA and then became a BCBA. I feel like that's a really good path to take. I feel like those kinds of BCBAs have a little bit more skin in the game. I'm a fan of it. During her career, she has founded two companies that provided ABA, applied behavior analysis services, to hundreds of families, schools, and individuals with autism or other developmental intellectual disabilities. She has ushered dozens of aspirational behavior analysts into the field. I can't read that word either, Amanda. Mycorrhizal influencer? I don't even know what that means. In pursuit of great impact of change for constituents. She has served as a subject matter expert to a number of international work groups and panels related to behavior analysis, ethics, and practice. I have seen her do that. And do it amazingly, and is happy to engage in copious amounts of verbal behavior about verbal behavior and all resulting relational frames. And she has that hashtagged autoclitics, and obviously we are going to do jargon based on this later down the road. She continues to be happily create unique solutions by synthesizing her own history of reinforcement and punishment with evidence-based practices, clinical and business intelligence and technology, in an effort to further support clinicians, funders, businesses, and founders in changing the world for quality of life, which is a very big deal to her, I know, including outcomes, neurodiversity, equity, and inclusion. An early proselytizer of verbal behavior, Ralston uses her considerable imitation repertoire and joint control to engage in behavior resulting in a wide variety of reinforcement. And that is true. She's very reinforcing to talk to. Her behavior continues to be shaped by its impact on a world where autism exists and the field of behavior analysis. Oh, my goodness. Autism Journey with Elijah said, love it. Very inspirational and impressive. Okay. So let's welcome back to the show Amanda Ralston. Mandy, as many people call you, I don't know what to call you today, but I'm thrilled to have you here. You are like a rock star. I think you've always been a rock star, but I think you're particularly a rock star right now in the field because you're moving and shaking and doing presentations, winning awards, and changing people's minds about a lot of things. And so I can't wait to talk with you about what this software is that you've got going at Non-Binary Solutions and what it's all about. But, again, I have to talk about the memes for just a second. people need to go look at you on Facebook and take a look, because you, throughout the day, if I check in on Facebook, and I'm not on Facebook that much, but you are intense. You post, it always makes me laugh. Like the meme itself that you post is hilarious, but the thing that's the best is your reaction to it, which is often one word. And that is what kills me every single time. What on earth are you doing?
Oh, geez. So much there to talk about, right? the Facebook memes, well, I generally, with my social media, each of the different platforms, I sort of have my own personality. I like to say that I'm vaguely professional on LinkedIn. I'm mostly authentic on Instagram, and I'm completely unhinged on Facebook.
Okay. I love that.
So, yeah, the memes are sort of a mental health practice for myself that just happens to benefit a lot of other people and their mental health. I get up in the morning, I go hunting for memes, and I post them, and you know, it's a creative exercise for me as well to sort of distill something about the post or the meme into one word often, as you pointed out, which, by the way, the first word you stumbled over was perspicacious.
What the heck is that?
It means sort of a laser-like ability to distill something into a small subset very quickly.
Well, like, that's why I didn't know what
that
meant.
I can read a room and sort of quickly, you know, put it all together.
Because I can't do that. I end up taking 7 hours to explain one word. So, no, that's amazing, and I'm glad that you are on the planet so that you can do that and have that skill. Thank you. That's a new – how do you say that again?
Perspicacious.
Perspicacious. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I really should, like, give everybody a break on my bio and take some of those words out. I forget that people use that to introduce me, and it's not quite fair.
It's very representative of you, though, because it's hilarious. It's thought-provoking. It shows you are clearly more intelligent than almost everybody in the room. I want to leave room for there might be people who can compete with you. I can't. But, you know, and you are a thought leader. That's the truth. I have seen that. So I think it's representative of you. So,
well, thank you.
And it's given me jargon now.
Yeah. There's plenty of jargon in there. So the microcosial influencer, FYI, just to give you a break on that one too, that means like a fungus network, right? So the spreading under the roots, that's sort of how I meant that process of bringing other behavior analysts into the world.
So like The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now we understand your bio, and that only took a couple of minutes. And we have a greater understanding of the memes. They're hilarious, you guys. They're very thought-provoking. And I'm not a big one to interact. Like, I give people hearts on a regular basis. But it takes a lot for me to just write something in. But I do occasionally just to say, you're killing me. You are killing me. It must be great for you. It must be reinforcing for you, the reactions that people give. It's almost like a ritual now. It's like, what has Mandy posted today?
Yeah, well, and there's a little method to the madness too, right? It's mostly memes. It's, as I said, mostly unhinged. But I do employ some principles of behavior analysis. There's a variable ratio schedule of reinforcement built in, right? So I've got lots and lots of memes, and every once in a while I'll drop something and that's very serious and very important. Because people have now gotten traction based on, you know, liking the algorithm, and so now they're forced to sort of reckon with something that maybe they wouldn't have paid attention to in the first place. So it's also a way of me sort of, again, being a social influencer at the same time and causing people to question some of their echo chamber. So.
Yeah. Amazing. It's working. So there you go. And it's very reinforcing for all of us who are tuning in. I said, if you're not following her, you're missing out on one of the joys of life. So, but all of this is because you've got this company right now, Non-Binary Solutions, and you've got software. So I'm going to shut up and let you talk about what it is because I've waited, I feel like, for over a year to hear exactly what this is. I can't wait.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so the software is a clinical decision co-pilot software, and the name of the software itself is Noetic. And so you can go to noetic.ai and take a look at what we're building. We are going to be rolling out the MVP SaaS product early May. We're going to be doing some internal testing here in the next week for our beta customers, and then we'll have it available for the public to be able to purchase. But at the simplest explanation is that if you go to your doctor and as they are interviewing you about your symptoms and what brought you in today, and they're typing at the same time, the doctor is using a clinical decision support system, right? And it's just that this type of software has not been built specifically through the lens of behavior analysis and a 25-year expert, that's me, as a practitioner, and specifically for the neurodivergent spectrum. The first part of the software, it's got multiple models within it. So there's a sequence of models, that helps standardize the decision-making process about building out a treatment pathway for all of these very, very different people that share often a common diagnosis code of autism spectrum disorder. And so there's multiple problems that we're trying to solve for here. The first problem is, as I said, that single diagnosis code for autism spectrum disorder. So that's a very heterogeneous group of people. At one end of the quote-unquote spectrum, you've got individuals that are profoundly affected by their autism, may need assistance taking care of themselves, communicating to be safe for the rest of their lives. And on the other end of the quote-unquote spectrum, there is no end, by the way, to a spectrum, you've got individuals that may just be called into HR on a regular basis because they're perceived as being rude, right? And so the science of applied behavior analysis has potential to help many individuals across that spectrum, but it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. And so we really are trying to help people understand who is this very specific person coming into your care, what is their particular history, what are their diagnoses, including their medical needs, right? Have they been able to get all of their diagnoses? If not, why, right? So we're looking at their social determinants of health, right? So if you haven't been able to get access to care, is it because there's waiting lists? Is it because of costs? Is it geography? We want to know all of those particulars. If you did get a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, who did you get it from? Did you get it from a primary care physician, or did you actually get a multidisciplinary evaluation, right? What are your medications that are you on? How many different doctors are prescribing those? What does your home situation look like? Do you have multiple households that you live in? Are there custody agreements? What are the primary languages that you use? What are your strengths and your skills and your interests? All of it, right? And so that first sequence of models, that first platform is called the care navigation model. And so when you answer all these questions, and it's designed for a clinician to use in an interview process with either the family or the person with autism themselves to the degree that they can participate in the interviews, then it builds out a sort of report for that person and says, here's everything you told me about this person, and here's a recommended action list of things we think you should do prior to day one of bringing them into an ABA clinic. So that may be things that include, say, a sleep study to rule out any seizure disorder. Or it might say, hey, we noticed that this 8-year-old is still not toilet trained, and therefore we want a medical rule out for any reasons that might prevent them from being physiologically trained to use the toilet before using any kind of behavioral procedure, right? So yeah, I'll stop there for a second and let you go for your first round of questions.
Well, amazing, but I know that one of the questions that's going to come in is that one of the barriers has been getting to that expert. That we have people around the country that are like, man, I had to wait 2 years to get to sit with the expert. Is there going to be a version of this where a parent could at some point sit and put this stuff in to speed things along and get started while they're waiting to get to the expert? Or is that 10 years down the road?
So are you saying the expert is the person that's running the software?
Yes.
Is that who you're calling the expert?
I'm assuming that you were saying that's a clinician.
That's a clinician.
Is it ever going to be that a parent can do that?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Shannon.
No, I'm sorry. My question is it ever going to – can somebody do it without the clinician? Can a parent do that part themselves?
We are designing it such that a clinician is actually going to be doing the interview. And the reason we've done that is because we've got – various types of clinicians that could be running the software. It might be a BCBA. It might be a board-certified behavior analyst like me. It could also be an LCSW. It could be a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Okay.
It could be a targeted case manager, right? So I know that there are waiting lists everywhere for behavior analysis. So we're designing it in a way that somebody with clinical chops should be able to run this.
Okay.
And the reason we want the clinician of some sort to run it is because answering those questions often for parents are very difficult, and it's predicated on their ability to accurately tact what's going on in the environment.
Yeah.
And then when you live in the forest, it is hard to see the trees.
It really is.
Right?
Yep. I appreciate
so
that.
You need somebody with clinical chops to be able to listen and have follow-up questions and reword some of the questions to the families so that you get the best information possible out of the interview.
I will say that it sounds like you're making – because – that interview, that process, which I will be honest, for a lot of parents, it's not nowhere near as thorough as what you're talking about. And I love that you're taking everything into consideration. But usually there is a period of time after that interview where they have to do reports and they have to run things, and that takes a long time. I do see where what you're doing is speeding that up so that they can focus more on the time with the person and have that report quicker, which means they probably, the wait list could move a little faster, maybe? Is that part of the hope?
Absolutely. And making sure that you're getting all those things done that should have happened prior to day one in the first place. And so if there is a waiting list, you're not wasting that family's time by letting them just sit there and not having a sort of actionable list that they could be taking care of and making some kind of progress towards things that need to happen. And so, yeah, the report writes itself. It's literally written in prose. It comes out as a PDF that you can immediately hand over to the family. That family Amazing. Can take it to their doctors or whoever the referrals are going to. It can also be submitted to the insurance company as here's some logic about why we're going to be building out our treatment plan the way that we are. And in addition to that, part of the software allows the users to take all of the client's records. We're talking all the medical records, all the IEPs, anything related to their evaluations, et cetera, and upload them into the system. And then the software is able to instantly allow the user to query all of those documents, meaning that I can type into the software and say, what medications is this child on? And it'll say, here's a list of medications, and here where they are in the actual records on page such and such and such and such, right? So that's going to save hours of time from the provider side of literally reading all those records over and over and over again to look for that kind of information.
Well, it's also going to help so that things don't get missed, right? I mean,
yes.
I know as a parent how much paperwork I have, and somebody could ask me something and say, did you ever do this or did you ever try that medicine? And in the moment, I might say yes, but you ask me a week from now, and if I'm busy, I've forgotten it. And I'm like, oh, well, I thought you meant this or whatever. So it's going to help to not miss things, which I think casts a better net around our kids so that we can be better allies, which is something we talk about all the time here. I'm guessing that part of this is AI.
Yes.
I warned you that I'm not, I'm not a computer person. So, but that's what we would call this, right? It's AI that it's scanning all of this and putting it all together for us.
Yes, but let's clarify that the AI has a fence around it. So it's not the AI that you think of when you think of ChatGPT, which is crawling the entire span of the internet, right? This AI has a fence around it that it's only specific to that client, right? So when the AI is reading the documents, it's contained within this space. So it's not going to accidentally hallucinate and bring something up from Disney.com, right?
And
it's not going to accidentally hallucinate and bring up something from YouTube because it's only what's contained within that client's server information.
Okay, cool. Okay, so wonderful. And for a parent, your experience of it is going to be different in that you will leave with this document and with things that action items that you could start right now based on your actual individual child and all of the things that you have done to date.
That's right.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and so what's going to happen with the data as we continue to have more and more users and that model is run on more and more individuals with autism or ADHD and all these other neurodivergent conditions is we will start to have a bigger and bigger data set and start to be able to analyze the data and understand that these people seem to be similar and these people seem to be similar and start to build out behavioral profiles or phenotypes of all these various types of people with autism so that the ultimate goal here is that with all that data, we start to understand which type of individual with which types of conditions tend to do well in what type of setting, with what types of interventions, for how long, at what intensity of services, right? So then we have a trajectory of understanding how people should respond to treatment, and if they're not responding appropriately, then we change our clinical decision-making in order to help them get there faster.
Yeah. Amazing. But you're including in this not just strict behavior, right? Because you had mentioned that you're also going to include medical in this as well, because somebody might. Now, this is very interesting because, you know, here at Autism Network, we've been on that bandwagon more since before time began. But I see that we're turning a corner with ABA professionals on this, but for a long time, they were like, ABA is over here, and anything that is medical is over there, and we don't know about it, we don't do anything about it. And of course, parents have said for years, that's not helpful.
Right.
This is my whole child who is picking their skin off of their hands to the point where they bleed.
Like, right.
Can we look at this and what is happening? Because it's, you know, there's a behavior element to it, but it's not just behavior. How much blowback are you getting from the ABA community, or do you feel like they've turned a corner?
I'm not paying attention to the blowback, if there is any. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And
good answer.
We'll take the data, and then we'll analyze it, and where we're wrong, we'll fix it, and where we're right, we'll say, I told you so.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's the perfect attitude. Okay, yeah. So is there more that this does? Because I have a feeling that it's the, but wait, there's more.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you get the care navigation model first. So that's building this report and this profile of this very specific person that's coming into your care. And then the next model in the sequence is called the goal development model. And so what it does is help providers understand how to tie medical necessity to a socially valid outcome that's meaningful for quality of life for that individual, that family, right? So what currently happens frequently is that a family will come in and say, my 8-year-old son is still not toilet trained. He only eats 5 foods, and we can't go to church anymore. We can't go to the grocery store anymore because he pulls everything off the aisles. And often the providers will say, great, we'll do the VB map and we'll do the Vineland assessment, which those two assessments have little to nothing to do with the 3 things that that family just said are affecting their quality of life and their day-to-day functioning. And so the goal development model will take, again, the user through an interview process with the caregivers and the families and the individuals with autism and identify what are the things that are affecting your quality of life right now and how does that relate to your diagnoses, right? Because that's the linchpin to medical necessity. It can't just be something you want to work on. It also has to be something that is medically necessary, at least if it's covered by insurance or Medicaid.
Yeah, there's the kicker. Order for insurance to pay for it, I find this a very interesting point because there are a lot of times that a parent will say, well, I would like to work on this. And I feel like the industry has gotten used to saying, well, we can't. And right. And I always go, but wait, let's clarify for that, for the parent, because the parent doesn't understand what you're saying. You could work on it. It's just insurance won't pay for it. But if the parent would like for that to be worked on, you know, you can work on it and, you know, statistically make progress on it. It's just insurance won't cover it. Now, are you telling me that you can find the way to make it so that insurance will cover it?
I think I'm going to help re-educate a lot of groups about how things actually can be worked on that are not just ADLs and shouldn't be.
What's an ADL?
Assisted daily living skills or adult daily living skills, right? Okay. And so making your bed, brushing your teeth, a lot of the insurance companies say we won't cover that at this point because they think it's something that should be done, you know, based on the family alone. And so I think we're going to do a lot of re-education about, you know, if somebody is not toilet trained, why are they not toilet trained related to their autism? Is it because they have a rigid and stereotyped set of behaviors, i.e. they prefer to stand when they have a bowel movement rather than sit down? Like, that's medically necessary. That is directly tied to the person's symptoms.
Yeah.
And so same thing with, you know, brushing your teeth or oral care. I don't know how many kids I've come across that can't get their teeth clean without general anesthesia.
Yeah.
And it's directly related to their autism. And so yes, that's a medically necessary goal, and yes, that's a socially valid outcome. If I can get somebody to get their teeth cleaned on a regular basis, that affects the entire span of their health outcomes, right?
Yes.
If you don't have good oral care, it's going to mess up a whole bunch of other areas. And I think the payers are starting to catch on as I'm nattering on to them about this, that wouldn't you like to save some money long term over this person's actual health outcomes if we can get their teeth cleaned on a regular basis? So I think that I'm going to help start connecting dots for people with how all of this actually is related.
Okay.
If you can tie it to socially valid outcomes that are medically necessary, meaning that it's tied to the DSM-4 or 5 criteria.
And so how does the software help the clinician who's making the decisions? Are they able to type in like teeth cleaning and then it gives them some language about why that might be medically necessary, about why that would be socially relevant?
So the software starts off with asking the families or the individuals, how much have these things been an issue for your family in the last 1 month, right? And sort of always, sometimes, never, right? And so it helps sort the areas of quality of life that need to float to the top in terms of priority. And then there's a second set of quality of life areas that are sort of secondary to the things that we've identified that are sort of the core functioning issues that need to be addressed first. So core functioning issues that we've identified are communication, safety, eat, sleep, and potty, access to medical care, and safety preparedness, right? And so if those seven things, if any of those seven things have been dinged in terms of affecting quality of life, it floats to the top of the priority list for treatment planning.
Okay.
And then based on how people answer the rest of the sequence of questions within the model actually produces goals, 6 month goals for the person that they can copy and paste and put into their treatment plan or the EMR that they're using, the data collection program that they're using. And the software is all designed to be continually repeated every 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, so that you're updating the data and you're starting to see where the needles are moving on all these things. So you have a dashboard full of data to understand what was my first model of sequence look like with this person, where are we now, is that trending up and down, left or right, so on and so forth. It ties those concepts together for the clinician based on how they answer the questions.
Okay. And is there more?
Of course.
Okay.
So the third model in the sequence, these are the three we're going to roll out first. But the third model is an intensity forecast model, right? So one of the biggest questions in our field is, how did you come up with that number of hours per week for that kid? I see a lot of organizations that approach intensity or dosage in terms of, all of our kids either get 30 hours a week or 20 hours a week or 40 hours a week or 20 hours a week. And that is not a clinical prescription. That is an operational decision, right? So, again, understanding who are these various different people with this diagnosis and who does well and who needs X number of hours per week and who needs more and who needs less. And so that we can get to this point of understanding what the outcomes might look like under certain intensity levels. And so it's a forecast. Again, it's not a prescription. It's saying, based on everything you've told me about this person, we think that this individual falls into this sort of tier of hours per week. And so with all of the software or all of the decision models, the clinicians ultimately have the autonomy and the final say about what they decide to do. The software is just making recommendations on what to do. And if they decide to do something different than what the software is recommending, you know, and the intensity being the example here, they can either agree with the recommendation or disagree. And if they disagree, they have to tell us why, so that we continue to collect data on some of the logic that's being used in the field. And again, we're not going to get it all right on the first pass. We're going to take the data, we're going to analyze it, we're going to find out where we're wrong, change the models from there, find out where we're right, and say, I told you so.
And so right now you're presenting this to BCBAs and clinicians, but it sounds like you're also presenting it to insurance companies.
Yeah. We've had different funders approach us about using this software because there's another larger conversation in the field that's happening about how to get to a value-based reimbursement model.
Yeah.
Right? So providers are asking for better rates, and funders are rightly saying, well, why should I give you a better rate? Like, show me that you're actually more effective at certain types of outcomes or more effective than these other providers, and I'll give you a better rate. But in order to do that, you have to be able to compare apples to apples. And currently, I can get 100 behavior analysts in a room and put one person with autism in front of them and say, how are you going to treat this kid? And they'll all have completely different approaches to how they're going to do it. And most of the reason they do it that way is because that's how they've always done it.
Right.
Nothing more or less. And so until we standardize all the parts and pieces of the decision-making process, we'll never be able to compare that data. And so that's the golden goose at the end of this whole thing.
I love that. My only caution is that I fear that the insurance companies are going to love this last part the most, because if there's the potential to make an argument that this kiddo doesn't need 40 hours, needs 30 hours, are you making sure that they're, like you're saying, that the clinician can override it? I just don't want to hear in 10 years that insurance says, no, we like what the software said and we're overriding the clinician. Can you build in a safeguard for that?
It's always with a disclaimer that this, again, is not telling you what to do. It's making recommendations, and the clinician ultimately has the autonomy to say yes or no. And here's my thing about the insurance thing.
Yeah.
Right? Hashtag is not binary. It is supposed to be, and I know this is idealist of me, but I'm out here trying to change the world.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be the case that it benefits all three parties, the patient, the payer, and the provider, to have the best possible quality outcomes in the shortest amount of time in treatment at the best rate. That's a non-zero-sum game. Everybody wins. But we've got to be transparent about the process in order to get there.
Well, I'm glad you're working on this. And I said at the start, you're smarter than I am. I always am grateful. Sometimes I'm awake at night and I cannot sleep because I'm thinking about all the things that need to change. And the one thought that lets me go to sleep is I go, there are smarter minds than I am working on this. I just have to interview them. That's all I have to do. I just have to interview them and give them the platform. So thank you for letting me be able to sleep. And I hope you get out there, and because I think it's safe to say we're a little upside down right now. I mean, I'm talking to parents, and I think a lot of times parents don't know the value of what they could have because of some of the things that have happened. They're a little upside down. I feel like insurance sometimes is wagging the dog. And it makes me a little crazy. So, and all we really want are the good outcomes. I don't want an insurance company to go under either, but, you know, we did pay the insurance. They're supposed to support what is medically necessary. That is the business they're in. Which I always want to remind people. Anyway. So what's your next phase? Are you taking people in beta right now?
Yes, we are. We've got 5 paying customers right now, and then we've got a laundry list of people that are waiting to get the beta access with the SaaS platform that's coming out.
What's a SaaS platform? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, sorry. Industry term. Speaking of jargon. SaaS is SaaS, which is software as a service. So when you go to bamboohr.com, that's a SaaS product. Okay. Or if you do quickbooksonline.com, that's a SaaS product.
Okay.
Right, so that's what SaaS is.
Okay. So, and that's coming out in May?
Yeah.
Okay. So if people are interested, where do they go?
Again, I'm not hard to find on the internet, depending on which version of professionalism you want. But you can go to nonbinarysolutions.com. You can go to noetic.ai. Noetic is spelled K-N-O-W-E-T-I-C.ai. You can go to amandaralston.com. Both nonbinarysolutions.com and amandaralston.com have a list of appearances that I'm making over the next few months where I've been invited to run my mouth in multiple settings. You can find me on the internet pretty easily.
I love it that you brought it with the glasses today, but I have to say, I love whenever you're speaking someplace, I love to see the pictures afterwards because you are a bit of a fashionista as well. And my favorite thing was that you went and spoke somewhere and one of the teens drew a picture of you and like labeled things. It was absolutely, is that like one of your favorite things now?
Yeah, I have a lot of fun with the fashion and the glasses, et cetera. You know, I think the first time that you and I met, I think it was at WIBA, you actually approached me about a pair of glasses that I was wearing. You complimented me, and so I took that as my opportunity to chase you down.
I love that. Well, the first time I had you on the show, I said I aspired to your hair. Because I love to rock a short haircut, but I cannot do it the way you do. I just cannot. I cannot do that. So it's okay. I can have hair envy. It's all right for me. But yes, you always have it going on, Amanda. So you're bringing it in terms of the presentation. I'm excited to see, and I'm excited to check back with you in a year's time to say what are you learning? What have you got going on? I'm grateful that you're in this industry and helping to move people in the right direction. Better treatment, better outcomes, things that make sense. And I love that you're including the whole person, not just looking at it from a behavior point of view, but looking at what's going on with the whole person. This is the direction we all need to be going. Well, you're fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you so much, Shannon. I really love the show, and I appreciate what you guys are doing so much.
Likewise, and good luck out on the road, although I don't think you need luck. You just need to have fun, and I know you are.
I'll do my best.
All right. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Cheers. There, Amanda Ralston, amazing. So things – I love it when we talk about things that are – that have been in the pipeline and that are coming. I find that very inspirational. I hope that you guys, too, you guys have written in and said that. Swathi said, very impressive. Thank you for sharing. Wonderful. You guys, we aren't really even officially in the middle of the month yet, although it feels like, woo, this April has been just off the chain. Reminding you that tomorrow we have the two gentlemen, the founders of Hurdle, both self-advocates who have put together this organization trying to help teens and adults on the spectrum. On Friday, Katie Gibney is here. She is an expert in treating teens and adults. You'll want to tune in for that. Don't miss on Monday, Lillian Carrier from Ourtism. Amazing, talented young actress who is also partnering with her sister, who is also brilliant and talented, to be able to help teens and adults. And Lillian can tell us about she was one of the main characters of Everything's Gonna Be Okay on Freeform. I loved that show. It was hilarious and poignant. If you didn't see it, I had to watch it like this because stuff would always happen on that show. They went there. Let's say that. Then on Tuesday next week, Dr. Grant Pichet is back. Her topic for that week is food selectivity. If you have a kiddo who is just rejecting a whole class of foods or only will eat this color or this texture, you're going to want to tune in. We're going to talk a little bit about pica as well. Then on Wednesday, Thomas McKeon is going to be here. We're going to stir the pot a little bit with Thomas. Thomas always brings the controversy. I don't really know why, but it always comes with him. Then on Thursday, we pre-recorded an interview with Dr. Temple Grandin. So we've already done it, but it is one of my favorite hours with her. We're talking about employment, her new book, and how passionately she wants to help support individuals on the spectrum to not only get the job, but to keep it. I will say this, it was a big eye-opener for me about my role as a parent, what I need to be doing right now. And I'm not doing it. And so I've started changing things already since this interview that we just did 2 days ago. And then Jen Barretta will be with us on Friday. She is an autism expert in the area of severe challenging behavior, including self-injurious behavior. So that will be a week from Friday. And then, you guys, we have another amazing week and a half after that. It's just off the chain. Don't forget that you can catch these live. You can look at Autism Live and find the schedule. But also, they're available after the fact on our YouTube channel or anywhere you get your podcasts. We got you. We got you for the month of April. So make sure that you tune in tomorrow for Hurdle. I do want to say that in the last full week, we are going to have Abby and Christine Romeo. Abby and her mom both are stars on Love on the Spectrum US. And we got to see Abby and her significant other, David, and their romance. Oh, my goodness. Just blew me away. And so we're going to talk about that with Abby and with her mom about what it's like to have people with cameras up your nose while you're trying to date and what the trip to Africa was like. We're going to talk about lions. We're going to talk about mermaids. We're going to talk about hats because Abby makes the most beautiful hats. You're going to love them. So all of that and much, much more coming up in the next few days until we get to the end of the month of April. And then we're going to try to outdo it in May. So thank you guys for being with us. I hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in tomorrow. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now. Thank you.
If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates. And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time.